Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday morning. And Monday at 9 o'clock is all things political. Connie Schultz is our guest this hour. Connie is a nationally syndicated columnist for the Plain Dealer and Creators Syndicate. She won the 2005 Pulitzer Prize for commentary for her columns that provided a voice for the underdog and the underprivileged. She's also won the Scripps Howard National Journalism Award for commentary and the National Headliner Award for commentary. She's written several books, including Life Happens and Other Unavoidable Truths, which was published in 2006. Her second book, For Random House and His Lovely Wife, is a memoir about her husband, Sherrod Brown's successful race for the U.S. Senate, and that was published in 2007. We have a lot to talk about this hour. We'll welcome your phone calls as we always do. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And if you would like to send an email, you can do that as well. And that number, well, that address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org for you to join our conversation. Connie, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me back, Kathleen. It's good to hear your voice.
Yeah, very nice to have you with us. I'm going to start where I didn't think I would start, but I was interested in something I was reading on the web this morning about President Obama's comments concerning newspapers.
And yes.
In which he talked about he was concerned about the direction of the news is all blogosphere, all opinions, no serious fact-checking, no serious attempts to put stories in context. You know, I have to say I agree with him, particularly in terms of this healthcare debate. There is so much there, so much of the story we're just not hearing right now.
Well, it's a, boy, talk about a palette of issues with one statement. Because I suspect what the president's referring to, that quote was actually given to the Toledo Blade. There's been a lot out there churning over, for example, copyright issues on the web. I've been writing about it, and others have, and we've had different ideas we're throwing out about it. But one of our concerns that had nothing to do with actual behavior of the blogs in terms of comments, it was more directed toward how often these blog sites not just aggregate the stories where they just give a headline and a link, but they all, in fact, I just saw it again this weekend with two of my columns, other blogs that have a sizable readership take the column and print the whole, they copy the whole thing there. They don't provide a link, or if they do, they provide it by the end of the column, and who's going to go to that and read it at our site of originator, cleveland.com, which is where the Plain Dealer is, if they've already had a chance to read it on the blogs. And that's what drives down the advertising rates then for newspaper websites. Newspapers are to blame, of course, because they didn't charge for content from the beginning. What the president was referring to is a concern, of course, for any journalist still lucky enough to have a job.
Mm-hmm.
We worry a great deal about unattributed stories, no fact-checking, spewing opinions that really catch like wildfire. I mean, look what happened with, for example, the death panels.
Right.
Notion that don't
right.
exist, never existed. Sarah Palin insisted that they did, and, of course, she's got her own... she's got her own followers, let's say, and immediately it just caught like wildfire on the internet. Reporters were working overtime, in some cases actually literally, trying to debunk these. I mean, it's not true that the mainstream media completely fails in the healthcare debate. I don't think that's true. I do think that we are still adjusting to this whole notion that he said, she said, is not adequate coverage sometimes. And I think in death panels, they actually proved it pretty quickly. They learned the lessons of the Swift voting back in 2004, when those accusations against John Kerry were not true, but journalists didn't come out soon enough and simply say, these are untrue, but they keep repeating them.
Mm-hmm.
And I did see that happen with, as an example, the death panel coverage.
Right. And is that because Glenn Beck is all over the place the last few days? He's on Time. Frank Rich writes a column about him yesterday. Is it because, can we say this is because of conservative radio talk that we're getting these stories and they're repeated and these tea parties are taking place all over, or what is it?
I think it's important for all the Republicans who are actually thoughtful conservatives to distinguish between conservatives and right-wing extremists. And I think people like Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck are indeed right-wing extremists. They have no concern for factual accuracy. What they care about are ratings numbers. You know, the thing, I read the Time magazine piece, for example, on Glenn Beck this past week, and I couldn't help but wonder, when you look at the money he is raking, the millions of dollars he is raking in, spewing this kind of bile, I can't imagine that some conservatives, or even his far-right followers, aren't starting to feel a little bit used, if they think about it. He keeps, you know, he argues that he's championing all these so-called little guys. He has nothing in common with these people who are following him for the most part. He is a very wealthy white male in America.
Right.
And, you know, we don't talk about that a lot. I mean, a lot of us who really object to what Limbaugh and Beck, and I mean, and I'll say, you know, full disclosure, Limbaugh's gone after me a couple times on his show. We hate to give them more attention by writing about them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it does feel like a quandary. I mean, how much do you go after what they say versus and try to, because you're not going to dissuade their followers, it looks like. I mean, my mail indicates whenever I take on one of these guys and write about anything they're doing, you know, they get on their airways, and it's like lemmings. They spew exactly what he tells them to say. I see it over and over in the emails, and I get them by the hundreds. They don't really sound like they're thinking for themselves at all. They call me every name imaginable. Often it's very much gender-related. And I'm not sure what I'm accomplishing by even addressing what they're trying to say, because I don't think I'm going to be converting any of their followers.
Yeah. I know I was trying to print some of your columns, and I can't figure out my computer to get rid of all of those comments on what you had to say.
Unfortunately.
And they go on and on and on, and I'm printing all these pages, and they go, oh, my gosh.
It's horrible. And we are pleading in the newsroom to do something so that at least you can print our columns without having
right.
to get all those comments, because readers get really turned off by the comments. As I'm sure you've seen by looking at them, the vitriol
right.
in some of those comments, which have virtually nothing to do with my column often and everything to do with my being a liberal and a woman getting some precious real estate in a newspaper.
Yeah. Do you consider yourself a champion for the underdog?
You know, I never think of it as underdog because these are the people I come from. I come from the working class. I was the first in my family to go to college. I'm a liberal, I often say. My being liberal is an act of gratitude because I'm the beneficiary of, you know, affirmative action and women's rights and guaranteed student loans and grants for college. I mean, so much of my life, and not to mention being almost a lifelong asthmatic who had incredible health care growing up because my father had a union job with union benefits. So, I just feel like out of gratitude, I keep wanting to make sure that we're paying attention to what's happening to an increasing number of men and women who work very hard and are increasingly allowed to be disrespected in public. I often quote my mom, who raised us four kids and told her three daughters over and over again, don't marry him until you see how he treats the waitress.
Right.
And you know what she was saying, how we treat those that we're allowed to mistreat is the measure of who we are as people.
That's a good thing to remember. Don't marry him until you see how he treats the
Yeah, I've only had listened
That's
the first
good.
Time. Well, let's not talk about that. I really did it right the second time.
Yes, you did, and then some. Where is this health thing going? What kind of bill are we going to see? Are we going to see any kind of substantial change, do you think?
I'm still optimistic, but in full disclosure, we should make sure all your listeners know that I am married to U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown, who was the co-author of the public option bill, part of this bill.
Right.
And in fact, he's holding a town hall today. To give you an idea of the state of these town hall discussions, he's held one in Cincinnati and now one in Cleveland, and we've had to have metal detectors at both of them.
Oh, my gosh.
Because of the threats we're getting.
Oh,
and,
my gosh.
Over health care. This is what I
right.
keep saying to people. Death threats over health care
yeah.
reform, which we know the majority of Americans want.
Yeah.
And I'm still optimistic that we are going to see significant change. I'm heartened by how much the president is finally getting on the road and talking about it. I was disheartened, on a different note, to look at the page one of the New York Times today and see five interviews with the president for Sunday shows, and all five of the interviewers were men.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that it's so important to have women's voices in this debate and people of color, their voices in this debate. We know how to ask questions, too, as you well know from what you do for a living. And I do think we bring a necessary and different perspective to the debate.
We take care of a lot of the health care for our families, let's face it. We take our children to the doctors. We keep track of their immunizations, et cetera.
Yes, and not only that, pregnancy is still considered a precondition, you know, in some insurance plans. We pay more. Single women who are not married and who have not had children pay more for their health care. I mean, women have a lot of good reasons to be invested in this debate.
Where is the public option going?
You know, I'd love to tell you that I am convinced it's going to happen. I'm not. What I am convinced it is not off the table. Jay Rockefeller, for example, West Virginia, has said publicly he will not sign on. He will not, you know, support a bill that does not have it. So it's been really interesting from my perspective as a journalist, but also married to a U.S. senator who's been in support of the public option, to watch how this has been unfolding behind the scenes as well. There's a lot of anger right now on both sides within the Democratic Party, because there are many who feel very strongly you have to have a public option. And then there are those who are more moderate. I hate to say they're more moderate. They call themselves more moderate, but I just don't know. I don't see what's liberal about caring for the health care of all Americans. I just think that's fulfilling the promise of America, that we take care of people who can't do it all by themselves. And we're not talking about just handing out free insurance to anybody. That's not what this is about, except for the very lowest of the economic scale. It's about making it affordable for everyone. And I just find it so interesting that these attempts to polarize it into liberal versus conservative. I know many thoughtful Republicans who tell me they too think everyone should have access to affordable health care. They may disagree, there may be certainly spirited discussion and disagreement about how to get there. But to depict this simply as a partisan issue, I think is certainly missing what I'm hearing from many and missing the nuances in this debate.
Mm-hmm. And what is the great fear, do you think, about a public option? Who's worried about this and why?
I think those who are worried about it don't understand what it is. We also know that many of those who are worried about it are the direct beneficiaries of Medicare. It's been interesting to watch the numbers. The largest single group who oppose this plan are senior citizens. Senior citizens whose lives are better, whose lives are healthier because of a government-run Medicare. And so I find it fascinating that, but they're also more vulnerable to fear, and I understand why. Getting older myself, I'm 52 now, you're not as strong. You're physically, you feel more vulnerable. And as you age, you feel more and more vulnerable. And the death panel's discussion by Sarah Palin, that's why I've never thought she was funny. I never dismissed her. I think she's dangerous for this country. Because putting that out there like that and getting people worried that somebody was actually going to decide who should live and who should die based on their age alone was unconscionable to me. And it really ramped up the debate and it took it into a totally different direction from where it should be, which is simply, if we're going to have this public option, what does it look like and how do we afford it?
And do you fault the president at all, Connie, for waiting until September to really take hold of this issue?
Yes. And I think that I wish President Obama had been more assertive sooner. I wish that Democrats had been better at articulating what the bill would look like and what it would mean. I think, again, it was really kind of astonishing to watch how they let themselves get derailed at these town halls by these people who would show up. In Cincinnati, for example, I was at that town hall. There were about 1,300 people in that room. I would say about 300 didn't really agree with what was being proposed for health care reform, but they were really respectful. But there was this 100, these 100 people who were doing everything they could to derail the town hall. They did not succeed, but as I mentioned to a fellow columnist recently, it's like Thanksgiving dinner. You're all at the table, and one relative decides to, behave really badly, and everybody's holiday is ruined.
Mm-hmm.
People left that town hall feeling so discouraged because of these repeated attempts by others to just shout down the meeting and to root. It was almost as bad as in New Jersey, where you saw, I don't know if you saw that video posted out in the New Jersey Star-Ledger's website of a man, these people shouting down a woman in a wheelchair.
Yes,
we saw that in Cincinnati with a woman who had breast cancer.
Oh my.
Being shouted down. And you look at that and the majority of Americans don't feel this way. They are appalled by that behavior. It's very hard to argue that it shouldn't be covered because it did happen. But it's not the face of America, and it's not really the opinion of most Americans, and that's what troubles me about these moments.
Well, I keep wondering, and I've said this on the air so many times, where is the Edward R. Murrow documentary or the series of documentary that thoroughly and compassionately look at health care in this country? Instead, we're getting those clips over and over and over again. We did a big health care forum last week on public radio, totally respectful, very, very informative. Participants from the insurance industry and doctors and state legislators, et cetera. There wasn't a person in the audience who wasn't well informed on this, and it was a substantial conversation. So why don't we see that on the national press? I really do think they are to blame for some of this coverage. It's over the top.
Well, and let's keep in mind, Kathleen, I agree with you about a lot of the coverage. Let's keep in mind that there's not a news organization in the country that doesn't have diminished staff.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're talking at the national news level, it's especially in crisis mode for a lot of them. And so what gets lost in that is the thoughtful coverage, the coverage that takes time. I think, you know, who's been doing a pretty good job of this, actually I'd say an extraordinary job, is Bill Moyers on PBS.
Yes, right.
And if you go to his website, he's had some very interesting interviews regarding health care. Now, he's accused of being, and this is what happens. If you air interviews that show the need for it, and including that one from the man who used to head up Cigna, if you include those interviews, you get accused of having a liberal bias. And again, I must stress, I don't see what is liberal or conservative about the issue of health care in terms of thinking that all Americans are entitled to affordable health care.
Kai Schultz, our guest for All Things Political, and we're going to welcome phone calls in just a moment. Nationally syndicated columnist for The Plain Dealer and Creators Syndicate. She has won the Pulitzer Prize. She wrote, and we'll get to this in a moment, one of her recent columns on Norma Rae. The real Norma Rae dies, but her fight lives on. So we'll talk to her about that. We have many other issues, of course, to cover, but health care is still front and center. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org. And in the interest of full disclosure, she is married to Senator Sherrod Brown, who is the co-author of the Public Option Plan. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now for Connie. The lines are filled, but keep trying and you'll get through eventually. Zach, our first caller from Green Bay. Hi, Zach.
Good morning.
Hi.
I just wanted to, although I agree with your guest for the most part, I did want to point out that I think the mainstream media is largely to blame for the way that this debate has opened up for the following reasons. Number one, they have almost exclusively talked about the cost issues in the context of government programs. They have not talked about the overall cost of our health care system, which is really the big problem and the reason why this alternative is being proposed. Number two, they have failed to, in a large part, talk about the unique costs built into our private health care system, including, you know, return on investment, CEO salaries, etc. And they have refused to look at how it is every other industrialized country does it better and cheaper. And finally, they have, you know, Farrah Fawcett dies, there's an hour-long primetime special. Michael Jackson dies, there are several hour-long primetime specials. Where is the hour-long special on network news talking in-depth about this issue?
Connie.
You know, Zach, I certainly hear your frustration, but I feel a frustration too because I have read a lot of that coverage. I've, you know, PolitiFact.com, for example, the St. Petersburg Times, has done so much work in rebutting false claims, and in doing that also talks about the health care costs. And then you've got even my own colleague at The Plain Dealer and Steve Koff, who's been doing fact checks on various issues, talking about the health care costs. The New York Times has been doing a lot of coverage. I think part of the problem is in smaller towns and rural areas where the media, where what they depend on is mostly television or talk radio, they're not getting as much information. And this is where you're often seeing some of the most volatile town hall meetings at the same time. I don't think there's a coincidence to that. I think there is a lot of coverage. It's a lot to consume. That's part of the problem. It really takes a thoughtful read of an awful lot of stuff to comprehend the issues.
Yes.
And while I agree that we have focused sometimes too much on disruptions at town halls and those sort of events, I do see a lot of good coverage out there, and including in the Capital Times. By the way, I want to thank Kathleen. I do want to acknowledge all my readers who see my column in the Capital Times because I do hear from them on a regular basis, and I really appreciate that they read the column and that they let me know their thoughts.
Great. Let's talk just a moment before we go back to phone calls. I really loved your column on The Real Norma Rae Dies, But Her Fight Lives On.
Thank you.
Crystal Lee Sutton, who died very recently at the age of 68. Tell me why you highlighted her and why we should remember her story, Connie.
Well, I thought what was so important is that, you know, Sally Field did a wonderful depiction of her as Norma Rae. She won an Oscar. She got, I think she won, she did win for Best Actress at Cannes Film Festival. She got a Golden Globe. Her career skyrocketed from there, and she was already quite well known, where Crystal Lee Sutton basically lived in obscurity after that. And she was always an activist, never gave up I mean, she is the reason. She was one of the chief players in bringing decent wages in health care to thousands of textile workers, you know, mill workers in the South. And most people didn't even know her real name. And at the towards the end of her life, she went 2 months without treatment because she had to constantly fight her insurance company to get coverage for the chemotherapy she needed. And to me, that just so illustrated. I mean, her life started hard and it ended hard. And I just wanted people to remember her. You know, I grew up, that movie came out the year I graduated from college, 1979. And one of the things I loved about it is it gave a female face to the voice of labor. I grew up in a union home. But most of the activists, including my father, they were all these big, burly men, you know. And here she was, this woman. And for me, it was at the height of my own awareness as a feminist, coming to terms with what it meant to be a woman in America who wanted to have a voice in the world. So there was a personal significance that I didn't really address in that column because I wanted to make it all about her.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I wanted people to remember her. Crystal Lee Sutton.
Yeah. Troy from Eau Claire, hi.
Hi. I see I got just a couple comments. Number one, I think the government has done a horrible job of managing Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. They can't fund those. And I really believe that the bulk of America drew a line in the sand and says, no mas. We can't do more when we can't manage these. So there's a distrust issue there with the government running something very personal to people. And then I guess your guest wanted to comment on that. I'd like to hear that, you know, how we're going to pay for this. It's just a simple little thing in life, I guess, money. But sometimes, you know, the left never really wants to acknowledge that. There's all this money out here, apparently. Then second of all, I really think that that's unfair to call Glenn Beck a far right-wing extremist when he's really a libertarian. And this movement is springing from small government libertarians that do not want government in every cranny of our life.
Well, let's address the latter first. He's not just a libertarian. He is a far-right extremist. A bunch of advertisers have pulled off his show because he accused Barack Obama of being a racist. That had nothing to do with health care, nothing to do with the economy. That was him really stoking the flames of the worst that we have in this country. As for Medicare, Social Security, and Medicaid, no, they are not poorly run. In fact, one of the things I find interesting when you look at these town halls, if you ask how many are on Medicare and they raise their hands, and then you ask how many of them would want to give it up, nobody wants to give it up. It's the most efficient insurance company in quotes, in the country. It has the slightest overhead compared to double figures in overhead for private insurance companies. It's not true that they're broken. It's not true that they can't be funded. And I think it's really important, any time you hear that, to talk about the actual facts of that. Ask anybody you know who's on Medicare and ask them if they want to give it up. I think and he's also incorrect about this. The majority of Americans in the polling show they do want health care reform.
And thanks for the call. Here's an email that's come in. Can you tell us why they didn't just propose to open Medicare to those who can't afford or qualify for insurance coverage in the open market on a sliding scale fee basis? We're now online to get the health care the insurance companies want at public expense.
They couldn't get the support from any of the Republicans to expand Medicare. That would have been a great idea. It's a great program. And the argument against it always is people say, you want to get single payer, which, you know, there are people, including myself, who think single payer would be a great idea. It's not going to happen. The president has made it very clear he will not support a bill for single payer. But I think that the Medicare model is the best model, and I would have loved to have seen it expanded, but there's not support for it in the Senate and the House.
And do you think there is enough, getting back to the money that our caller was concerned about, do you think that there is enough specificity, or will there be, concerning how we will pay for, if we achieve a goal of universal coverage, how we're going to do it?
I don't think it's going to pass without it, because I don't think the president's going to sign it unless it's spelled out. That's the real challenge with this bill is, how do you find the money? How are you going to fund it? And to some extent, you can't predict a 10 years down the road what it's going to cost, because if everybody gets more efficient, if hospitals are more efficient at preventing secondary infections, if insurance companies and doctors get more efficient at not prescribing redundant tests, for example, we don't even know exactly how much cost can be saved until it kicks in. That's part of the problem with this. There's a very solid argument that it's going to save money. What we don't know is how much money until we see how many are going to comply.
Yeah. Do you have you read the book? What's the name of it? I just had them on too. My mind can never remember the names of books. The guys who wrote about all the presidents from Truman all the way to Barack Obama and healthcare reform. It's a marvelous book.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that.
Oh, it's really good. But I love their story about Lyndon Johnson, who would just say, you know, get this through, don't. And he was mad at the budget people because they were saying,
right,
here's how much it's going to be down the road. And he didn't, yeah, no, you don't do that. You don't talk about the money on this. We never do it that way.
Well, part of the problem for Lyndon Johnson, he was so used to being so heavy-handed in the Senate and getting what he wanted.
Right.
And then he became president.
Right. Right. It's a great, well, at any rate, whatever the name of the book is, it's a great book. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Dave from Appleton is next. Hi, Dave.
Hi. The previous caller is kind of an example, I think, of some of the problems of communication. He probably was really interested in knowing some answers, but he ended up with three questions. I found it effective, a few things. One, I don't let anyone label me as liberal or anything else, and I don't admit to being anything because I'm really interested in results. And the second thing is, a lot of times people try to move around. They'll throw out something, and you'll try to answer it. And then they'll throw out a second thing and a third thing, and you constantly have to bring people back to the original subject. And when I've been a lot of healthcare reforms, and I found success with people who really do care, it takes a lot of time. I mean, it'll take me 20 minutes with someone on one specific aspect of healthcare who is ranting and raving, and we finally get done. We actually aren't that far apart. And I think now they're thinking more about how do we really solve it. But when you respond, they want to switch to another subject and another and another. And it's only when you get them one-on-one in a very quiet time and go methodically through it do you ever get someone to come around.
I wish we could clone you. Your name is Dave? I just wish we could clone you, because talk about a thoughtful response. And you can see he's right, illustrated by the previous caller. Nothing against that caller, but this show isn't about Glenn Beck, right? We talked about Glenn Beck a little bit, but it's easier to talk about Glenn Beck and defend Glenn Beck than to talk about healthcare reform, because your caller's right. This is really hard stuff. Mm-hmm. If it were easy, I really believe we probably would have done it quite some time ago. We've been trying to do it since Truman, the Truman administration. It's very hard, and Barack Obama has committed to doing the hard work, getting Congress to do the hard work, and it's really fraying nerves and tempers and tensions, you know, increasing the tensions, because this is not an easy bill. It is not an easy thing to change, but without it, we're going to see more and more Americans, not just without health care, but who are dying because they don't have it. You know, in Ohio here, in the last 5 or 6 years, we have seen the doubling of the number of free clinics. And they tell me, one clinic after another, the reason they've had to have so many more clinics around is for all the people who have full-time jobs and no health care.
What do you think of the president's, you know, it's amazing when you think how short a time he's been in office, isn't it, Connie? He's been on, there are so many huge issues here. Do you think that he's done a whole lot of huge changes in government and that's what has incurred the wrath of people who are concerned about big government takeover in some way? Or is it something else?
I think he is trying to do a lot, but I also think that he's trying to do what he said he would do. If you talk to people on the far left, they're going to complain that he's not doing nearly enough and he's compromising too much. If you talk to the far right, my God, it's the Armageddon. You know, and one of the things I've said repeatedly about some of the Democrats who are now opposing the public option, opposing what he's trying to do, or saying he's moved too fast, I said this on Rachel Maddow's show, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago. Look, you went out and campaigned for him across the country last year, all these Democrats saying, trust this man. You can trust this man with your country. Well, did they mean it? Because if they did, it's time to actually illustrate that trust. Americans voted in a very different kind of person for president. And I say this thing, early on I was very much, and I think I was on this show talking about Hillary Clinton, mm-hmm, and how much I loved Hillary Clinton. And so it's not like I'm not one of those people who was there from day one. I have come to really respect the integrity he brings to the debate. I love his wife. He always told me, you know, he came in Ohio and campaigned for Sheridan 06, and he kept saying every time he'd see me, you got to meet Michelle. You'd love Michelle. Well, he was right, because Michelle sold me. But I think he's doing what he said he would do. He's trying to. And this is really different. It's all different. But the problem here is that our situation is different. Nobody, when Barack Obama, when all the people first got in the presidential campaign, nobody foresaw what was going to happen to our economy by the time he was in office. And this is a very scary time for everyone. And I appreciate how, you know, obviously I could never be president. I could never be as calm as Barack Obama when people are hurling everything at him. I appreciate his steady hand in this, and I appreciate that he's trying to do what he said he would do. But I also appreciate how much that scares some people, because it is faster than we're used to.
Yeah. And you must be happy then to see Michelle Obama talking about health care.
I could not be happier. I was quoted in the New York Times a few months ago saying, I want her to talk about policy. I don't care what she's wearing. I don't care. I mean, I think a garden's great. And I know they weren't particularly happy with me, some people in the administration, but I really wanted her out there doing what she's doing now. She is such a great spokesperson for the American people. I mean, you look at her popularity numbers, which continue to be higher than her husband's.
Mm-hmm.
She's a bright woman. She cares. When you hear her talk last week about why it matters to have health care and why it mattered to her and her family when their second daughter, Sasha, was ill after she was born, they knew something was wrong. It was so personal. And, you know, this is, I keep thinking about women of this country, and women tend to be less partisan. Women care deeply about one another and about their families and about this country. And I think she reaches an awful lot of people who want to bring, they just want to bring some cool to the heat.
Yeah.
So that we can have a reasonable conversation.
Thanks, Dave. We go to Jim from Milwaukee next. Hi, Jim.
Yes, hi. It seems to me that you can easily trust a government more than the insurance companies if you just get a government that wants to do its job in terms of supporting the interests of the people. But here's the quandary to pose to you and the guest. You know, when we find out that somebody like Rahm Emanuel put congressional campaign funds from the DNC into primary support of Blue Dog Democrats and elected them also in the finals, who do we go to in terms of a website or a source to trust, find somebody we can trust to elect real progressive Democrats, which if we had more of them, we wouldn't be having so many problems?
Well, that's a really good question. I'm not sure what the actual website would be. I think what you have to do is you educate yourself on the candidates, and if you are somebody who contributes to candidates, you make it clear that you are not going to contribute to anyone who isn't a progressive. And, I mean, I you know, I've seen how the DSC and the DNC and the DCCC or whatever, I know a lot of these players. And I think you're saying what I say often to them. You know, and women can feel strongly about it because of certain issues that a lot of these so-called moderate Democrats don't support that women care about, including the issue of choice. And unless you speak with your money and make it clear that you're not going to fund some of these candidates, I just don't think it's enough to say we want more Democrats. We need Democrats who act like Democrats, or at least act like the Democrats that those of us who were raised in that tradition understand it to be and know it now to be, if we're going to get real reform passed in this country that's going to save the lives of a lot of Americans, not just help the lives, not just improve the lives, but save the lives of a lot of Americans who have nobody helping them if these people don't step up for them. It's a great question, and I hope that you start challenging anybody who calls for contributions and you educate yourself on the issues and you just make it clear who you will and will not support.
Thanks, Jim, for your call. Mary from Manitowoc. Hi.
Hi. I'm really enjoying your guest.
Thank you.
And I also enjoy your show because I learned so much. I have a comment about the president and a question about how to deal with conservatives. First of all, I think I remember you had a guest shortly after the election, and he had said that if Obama was going to do what he said he wanted to do, he needed our help, that he would get a lot of pushback. And I keep remembering that during all these discussions. Secondly, I have a brother-in-law who is one of those conservatives who gets all his information from Fox News, truly believes that it's balanced coverage. He made me listen to Beck on a challenge because I said that I was willing to listen to other viewpoints. This man makes all kinds of claims, but nobody answers back, and that's why I'm glad that people like your guest do answer some of those, because I don't know what to say back. I know that it's not true, but there's enough truth, I guess, that makes it sound plausible. And I know there are conservatives that are not far right-wing,
right,
that are listening to this stuff and taking it in and believing it. So how do we fight that?
Well, what a thoughtful question, and it's so nice to hear a woman call her. Thanks for your question.
Yes, it is.
I think of a couple of things. I was speaking to two different groups last week, and one was a group of high schoolers, student leaders, and they asked, how do we become activists? How do we fight the vitriol that's out there? I mean, very earnest kids, and I didn't presume that they were all liberal. But what I said to them is, and I think I'm going to write about this soon, the list of excuse me's, if nothing else. Excuse me, and you do it politely when the conversation says, excuse me, there is no such thing as a death panel. Or, excuse me, that comment is really inappropriate. Yes, Barack Obama is a citizen of this country. And then I said, you can take it down to, excuse me, I'm really sorry you say to the cashier that man just treated you that way, because I know that you are a fellow human being with me. And the point of it being that sometimes what we have to do is the hardest thing to do, which is not respond with anger, because it makes us angry when these lies are out there. I get this chain email, and I'm sure your brother-in-law probably saw it. It looks so official. It looks like it's itemized the entire bill and tells you all the things that are horrible, including all the stuff about Acorn in it. It's completely false. And what I do, and I've mentioned this website before, and I strongly recommend it to your listeners, politifact.com, because they took that entire email and disputed everything. They just proved that it was wrong. And it's a nonpartisan website. And so I think what we have to do is we arm ourselves with information and the tools and the suggestions, but we also have to accept two things. One, we're not going to change the minds of extremists. But number two, those extremists are absolutely in the minority. It doesn't feel like it because they're so loud and they get so much attention, but they are in the minority. And most Americans don't want to feel that angry, and they don't want to be that angry at their country all the time. They don't want to believe some of the stuff that the Glenn Becks and the Rush Limbaughs of the world say. And I think they're growing in number, but they don't know how to deal with it. They don't know how to address it. So I appreciate what your caller's saying, because it's very hard one-on-one. It's hardest of all with family. And I've written about it. I wrote about it last year, when the issue of race was so prominent in the presidential campaign. And I said, this is the hardest thing for some of us. My dad, but both my parents are gone. They died in their 60s. My dad struggled with race his entire life. But I know I would have had to have that conversation with him, and I think of a woman in her 40s who called me right before the election and said, well, I did what you said. I went back, and I talked to my dad, and when he said I couldn't vote for that man because he used a horrible term for a black person, she said, Daddy, and she said it was the first time she's ever done this. She put her hand up, and she said, Daddy, stop. And then she told him why she was voting for Barack Obama. And I said, how did that feel? And she says, well, my knees were shaking. But I felt so much better because he was quiet and he listened to me. And I don't know if he voted for him, she said, but at least he understood why I would.
Wow. One other thing, though, I think maybe one way we can combat that, at least with our congresspeople, is just tell them that we are for the health care.
You are so right about that, Mary. I'm sorry, complete your sentence. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no.
So right. I can tell you right now what my husband says often to me. He comes home because the ones who oppose it are very organized, as you know, because they have Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh who are telling him what to say, where to send it. They have these talk show hosts. I mean, our home address gets posted on the web, by conservative talk show hosts. Show up in their driveway. There is no equivalent to that. And I will say this, too. I've been very unhappy with MoveOn.org. Which is supposed to be a very progressive organization, because they send out these blanket emails about every member of Congress and say, let them know you want the public option. And it never separates the ones who have already been so publicly fighting for it. That's the far right is much better at targeting, I have to tell you, than some of the liberal organizations. But you're absolutely right that if more members of Congress, because I will tell you, most of the ones who support the public option, for example, will tell you that the mail and phone calls are getting majority oppose it, even though they know that that probably doesn't reflect the majority of Americans. And it takes a strong person in elected office to be able to decide two things. I was elected to do this thing, and if I do this thing, it feels really scary, and it may mean I don't keep my job, but it's what I said I would do.
Thank you, Mary, so much for the call. Connie Schultz is our guest, nationally syndicated columnist for the Plain Dealer and Creators Syndicate. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@WPR.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program today, on October 2nd, the International Olympic Committee will announce the host city for the 2016 Summer Olympic Games. Chicago, as you know, has been selected as one of the four finalists, and some of the events would take place here in the state of Wisconsin. We'll be talking about the economic impact, positive or negative, that the Games would have on Chicago and nearby states in the Midwest. Our guests have studied extensively the L.A. Olympics, the Salt Lake City ones were rife with scandal, as you know, the Atlanta Olympics and others. So that's coming up the second hour of our program. Connie Schultz is here now. Our number 800-486-8655. Amy from Madison is next. Hello, Amy.
Hello. I think the mainstream media need to focus much more on all of the money that certain congresspeople have received from insurance companies, and I'm specifically right now thinking of Max Baucus. He is a very powerful senator. He's introduced a bill that he says is full of reform that's going to help people, and as I understand it, he's received a huge amount of money from insurance companies, and that they basically wrote this bill. And Americans are being held hostage this way. It's like we're trapped in a prison. We can't get out because we have prostitutes in Congress who are just doing the bidding of the insurance companies, and many of them are Democrats.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think first, I certainly appreciate your viewpoint, and there are a lot of people who feel the way you do. I think it's really important, first of all, to point out that Max Baucus's bill, as it's being called, is by no way a done deal. And one of the ways you can ensure that it isn't a done deal is to push back on your senators and your representatives. I can't overstate how important that is, because you're right, he does get a lot of insurance money. But you're also right to say that a lot of Americans feel like they're being held hostage by this process. But this is still a process, emphasis on the word process, and you can have such a vital voice in that. If you would, they are really paying attention to what they're hearing from constituents right now. I keep saying that because it's true.
Well, I hope that the Democrats in the Senate will vote against Max Baucus's, the Democrats' bill.
Yeah, well, there's a lot in that bill that troubles me as well, and I hope you're right.
Thanks very much for the call. Let's go next to Dave from Madison. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, good morning. A couple comments, and I just got irritated before the last break about how your guest basically stated, well, there were a lot of phone calls, and they were in opposition, but that's not the real people. You know, where do you come up with that kind of concept where basically a majority of the people that are against something that you're for, it's not the people? And second of all, I would like the guest to explain to me, name me one thing the government runs efficiently. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, the Senate cafeteria has subsidies, and that ran at a $2 million deficit. And the government one time took over an off-track betting place in New York City, and they ran that into the ground. Now, explain to me how you think. I mean, I obviously you're smart enough to win the prize, but I don't understand how you can come up with these facts where basically they're facts and you dismiss them.
Well, I'm going to do this caller a favor and not show the disrespect that he just showed me. I'm not going to question his intellect or his integrity on this issue. You want an example of one well-run government program? Medicare. As for my saying, these weren't the real people calling in. That isn't what I said. I said that the far right is very organized. It gets its opposition to weigh in with members of Congress and the Senate, but polling, nonpartisan polling, consistently shows that most Americans want health care reform, including a recent poll that showed that most physicians want health care reform. So when I say that what we know the numbers are, I'm talking about actual statistics from different polling that's ongoing. And it fluctuates somewhat, but overwhelmingly it looks still that most Americans know that we need change. And it's also important, one of the things I think we need to talk about when we're doing this debate is there's a difference between seeing they want, are they happy with health care, or are they happy with the health care system? Because a lot of people who have health care right now will say they're happy with it because they haven't needed it in any extraordinary way yet. But if you ask them about the system, then you start to hear the stories of their frustrations.
And thanks for the call, Dave. We go next to John from Milwaukee. Hey, John.
Hi. I got a couple of things. A couple of well-run government public options, I would say, would be the public library, the University of Wisconsin system, the sewers, when I flush a toilet, when I run my water, the fire departments, the interstate highway system, the Wisconsin public radio that your caller just called in on, National Public Radio, public broadcasting. I mean, that's a public option that hasn't run anybody out of business. The Fox station started while public broadcasting was in existence, and CBS hasn't gone out of business. So there's lots of public options that exist that are government run and that are well run, and that our lives would be much worse off without it.
But, well done.
But I was calling in on was a suggestion for financing, because I'm sure they're always looking for suggestions for financing the health care reform that they're doing. It wouldn't pay for all of it. But I remember 25 years ago when I used to, when I first started getting involved in the stock market, it cost me about, probably $30 when I would do a trade on a stock. And through the magic of the internet and through the magic of computers now, it costs virtually nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So that you see day traders going on every day. So here we have a part of the economy that has gotten extremely efficient, and actually part of the problems we had in the last year with the economy has been the volatility of the stock market and the credit default swaps and all that. My suggestion would be that we take the advantage of the efficiency, that reduce the price of trading stocks from $30 a trade down to virtually nothing, and we put a tax on every trade. Let's put a dollar tax or a 0.1% tax on every trade in Wall Street and gain some of that money back from Wall Street.
I think John's point is really well put. John, correct me if I'm wrong. I think what you're talking about is cost containment.
Mm-hmm.
And there are discussions about that. I've not heard it quite phrased the way you are, and I promise to take that home.
Yeah.
I think that's something worth thinking about. Thank you. And thank you for your long list. I'd also like to add, as you were pointing out the sewer system and stuff, every clean glass of water you drink is because of a government-run program.
Thanks, John, for your call. Here's an email that's come in. What does the guest feel about the bile spewed by the likes of Keith Olbermann and Chris Matthews?
Anybody who only tells one side of the story and wants to turn up rage and hate is not doing a service to our country. I'm not going to defend when they get out of control on those shows. On the other hand, I also understand why they came into existence, because before that, all we had was far-right talk radio, far-right TV talk shows. And I think that Keith Olbermann, just as Bill O'Reilly for a lot of people, gives an expression to a lot of anger in this country, particularly when race has become an issue again, and I understand why he does what he does. Chris Matthews, the same. I think Rachel Maddow, I love how she does her format, because she doesn't do the talking head screaming at each other. She's not interested in that. She does one-on-one interviews, which is why I've been willing to go on her show as often as I have, because she's smart. She really does. She has more conservatives on her show and has thoughtful discussions with them when she doesn't agree with them, but she's still respectful toward them. And I think that is the model for how we ought to be having these conversations. I don't mean necessarily to be critical of Olbermann and Matthews. I'm just saying that not interrupting people and not trying to goad them into saying something that, you know, is only going to inflame it, but having a conversation is harder work. And I could not be happier for her that she just celebrated her one-year anniversary.
Yeah. I remember saying to her some months ago, Connie, you really ought to have your own show on MSNBC. We were both just kind of laughing about it because she thought it was beyond her wildest dreams.
Oh,
I'd love for that to happen. And then it happened.
Well, you know how it happened in part. I mean, she already had the radio show. But when she would come on as a guest on these shows or as a guest anchor, people liked what they saw. A lot of viewers liked it, and I couldn't be happier that it's a woman doing this. You know, I said, I'm not claiming that we always take the high ground. Far from it. I have already talked about Sarah Palin. But I think that we can often change the level of discourse, you know, change the nature of discourse if we at least are allowed to participate. And I love that she's leading the charge in that direction.
Right. Stephanie from Madison, hi.
Hi there. Let me chime in. Hooray for Rachel Maddow. I just want to make two comments. First of all, regarding Crystal Lee Sutton, I met her many years ago in 1984. She came to Madison. I was a union activist with AFSCME and a union steward for a number of years. And she was just, you'd never know she was, you know, the person, what an influential and powerful person she was. She was the real Norma Rae, because she was just the most real, sweet, down-to-earth person you'd ever want to meet. She was just a doll. And regarding health, the issue of health care, there are so many things I could say. I do listen a lot to liberal talk radio, and I agree that we have to, I have to just be careful as to how much I listen to, because sometimes it's almost like a form of conditioning, and I'll find myself talking the way some of these folks talk, and it can be journalism and information, but it also is entertainment. We have to remember that it's not like NPR or other shows. But
all right, I've stopped there because we're almost out of time, Stephanie. We have about 10 seconds, Connie.
Just to follow up on Stephanie, rage will blind you. It'll blind the right. It'll blind the left. It blinds all of us. Thank you for ending it with that, Stephanie. It was a great contribution.
Connie, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Kathleen.
I hope the town hall meeting goes well today.
Thank you. Me
Thanks.
Too.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure you do. Connie Schultz, our guest. She is a columnist, nationally syndicated for the Plain Dealer and Creator Syndicate, author of Life Happens and Other Unavoidable Truths, and also author of And His Lovely Wife, a memoir about her husband, Sherrod Brown's successful race for the U.S. Senate, which was published in 2007. He is the sponsor, co-sponsor of the Public Action Plan. Well, that was fun, huh? Thanks, everybody, for all your calls. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, to Rob Schroeder for on-air production here in Milwaukee. And we have news coming up. We'll return with more conversation for this Monday.